Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey there again, it's Neil Hellegrist, host of Adrenaline Realm's Thriller Channel, and this is False Idols, Episode 7. Enjoy.
Bennett stopped writing the receipt and lowered his glasses to look down his nose.
I'm sorry?
I'd be happy to sit in on your appointments with international clients and translate like I did today. In exchange, maybe you could tell me more about the art in your collection and the marketplace?
Bennett appeared thoughtful. He twirled the pen in his fingers.
You do have a nice way with customers. And your linguistic background, not to mention your intimate knowledge of the type of clientele we deal with, would be helpful to me. It's just, I'm unfortunately not in a position at the moment to offer compensation.
I'd like to volunteer, Layla cut in.
I don't need the money.
The compensation would be the knowledge I gain.
She tried to look calm as she waited for his response. If she was a volunteer at the gallery, she'd see deliveries go in and out. She'd have access to paperwork, current clients, and all kinds of information. Not to mention access to James.
Well, what do you think?
Layla prompted. Slowly, Bennett grinned.
I think this is my lucky day.
He extended his hand, and she shook it.
Welcome to the family. Let me give you the tour.
As Layla followed Bennett through the gallery, carrying the cold bronze cat in her hands, the warmth of his words spread through her. Welcome to the family. Of course, he was just talking about the gallery, but it felt so personal. She forced her mind back to the tour and committing the gallery layout to memory. The front of the suite held the main gallery with two smaller adjoining showrooms. One doorway off the main gallery led to a corridor of back rooms. The door at the very end had a sign saying storeroom. Along the corridor, there were two office doors on one side and three on the other, as well as a restroom and a small office supply closet with a photocopier. The largest office, nearest the storeroom, was for Bennett. Just before it was a closed door that said Studio, with brown paper taped up over the window. As they reached it, Layla heard the tapping sound of a chisel on stone and a low whoosh of a ventilation system.
I'd love to see what James is working on, she said, putting her hand on the doorknob.
It didn't turn.
Unfortunately, for insurance purposes, studio access is restricted, said Bennett.
He steered her toward a door marked IT and opened it, revealing a gaunt, acne-scarred guy about her age, hunched over a computer keyboard.
This is Hamadi Assam. He takes care of all our IT needs here in Cairo and manages our website. Hamadi, meet Layla Nawar. She'll be volunteering for us now and then as a translator in the coming weeks.
It could be handy to have a computer guy in her back pocket, should she need access to Bennett's electronic files. Layla gave Hamadi her friendliest smile. It was not returned. He wasn't cold like Mackie, but gloomy and preoccupied. His eyes flicked briefly her way, then returned to the glow of his screen. They walked past the door marked Security, Mackie's office, she guessed, and Bennett pushed open the next door. He showed her a room not much bigger than a broom closet.
Your quarters. Should you need a place to keep your personal belongings, or to catch your breath between clients on days when we're tightly scheduled.
There was just enough room for a tiny desk, a computer, and a small shelf of reference books and auction catalogs.
It's humble, I'm afraid, but much of the time you will spend in the gallery interacting with customers.
Layla thanked him and set the bronze cat on the desk.
Now, let's talk scheduling, said Bennett. I'd love for you to come in the day after tomorrow. I have a German-speaking customer coming in, and your translation help would be invaluable.
Sure, I can...
Layla stopped herself.
Oh, wait.
Wednesday she'd be flying to Lake Como.
Actually, I'm sorry. The earliest I could start would be this Friday.
Bennett frowned.
I'm so sorry,
Layla sighed. The conundrum was real. She wanted to continue to impress Bennett with her skills, and to meet all his clients, but the chance to get to Tanaka's house was too good to pass up.
It's just, I already committed to going to Lake Como for a couple of days with some friends.
Right.
Bennett ran his fingers through his hair.
But once I start this Friday, I'll be here whenever you need,
Layla assured him. It would be easy enough to do. As an heiress, except for the occasional jaunt to Europe, she had nothing but time on her hands.
Look, I'll be grateful for any time you can give us,
said Bennett. He twisted his wrist and glanced at his Rolex.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to dial into a conference call with London.
He shook her hand once more and said,
See you Friday,
before hurrying back to his office. Alone, Layla picked up the unwanted bronze cat. She turned it over in her hands. It really was ugly. A noise by the door startled her. Turning around with the cat, she saw James in the doorway, smiling at her, his dazzling blue eyes crinkling around the corners. Involuntarily, she smiled back.
Look at you,
he said.
The cat's meow.
Layla leaned against the desk and held up the cat.
Like it?
James laughed.
It's sort of hideous. I've never liked those things.
Layla laughed too.
I know, right? But your dad somehow convinced me this was the thing to buy.
Well, he's right,
James said.
They're highly collectible, and you'll have no trouble getting your money back out of it. Why are you hiding out in here?
It's my office, she said, gesturing expansively at the tiny room. I'm going to be working here as a translator.
Wait, seriously?
Layla briefly explained what had happened.
So now we're co-workers,
James concluded.
I'm just a volunteer, she corrected.
Still, this means I can see you any time. How good is that?
A sly grin spread across his face. He took a step into the office. Because the space was so tiny, they were suddenly just inches apart. So close, Layla could smell his aftershave. A sandalwood scent. She breathed it in deeply.
It's very good, she said.
And maybe once in a while, I could do this.
He leaned forward and kissed her on the cheek, then slid his lips over to her mouth.
Maybe,
she whispered. God, what was happening to her?
Though it's probably against the rules,
he murmured,
consorting with a colleague.
His tongue gently parted her lips. Electricity ran through Layla's entire body as her tongue met his. She shivered.
I don't know. I didn't read the employee handbook, she whispered between kisses.
James drew her close.
Let's move this thing,
he said in a low voice, taking the bronze cat out of her hands and setting it on the desk. He pushed the door closed, then returned to her, kissing her with more urgency. Layla could hardly breathe, partly from desire for James, partly from fear. She'd vowed to slow it down and not to cross a line. She should pull away now, keep things light and flirtatious only. But James's arms around her, after the chilly atmosphere of the Gaffar's Swiss villa, felt incredibly good.
"So I guess you missed me," she managed to say when she came up for air. "Are you kidding?"
His kisses traveled to her shoulder.
"It was such a long week."
His hand slid down her back. Layla pulled away. This was heating up way too fast.
"Really? I didn't hear much from you," she said.
"I know."
James released her from his embrace, except for one hand which he gently pressed between both of his.
"I'm so sorry about that. We've been seriously swamped here. My dad has me working overtime trying to get this restoration job finished and shipped by a deadline."
He glanced at a wall clock.
"Speaking of, I'm on a timer. I have to apply another coat of resin."
"What are you working on in there?"
Layla asked. She studied his face carefully. He had dark shadows under his eyes, as if he really had been burning the midnight oil.
"Restoring gilding on some statuettes," said James.
"I'd love to see," she said hopefully.
"I'll show you when it's all done. Right now the fumes are pretty vile."
"Okay."
Layla pushed away from the desk and picked up the cat again.
"I should go. I have some stuff to do too, like packing."
"You're leaving again?"
His face fell.
"You just got back."
"Hiro has a gig in Milan and is having some kind of house party at his dad's villa on Lake Como. I'm going on Wednesday as Jehan's chaperone, so her parents will let her go."
She smirked. Then she heard herself ask,
"Any chance you can come?"
He shook his head and laced his fingers through hers. His hands, she noticed, looked delicate, with long, tapered fingers, but they felt strong and roughened by hard work. She noticed flecks of gold on them, and a streak of black.
"I wish," he said. "Believe me, I could use a break right now, and Italy with you would be amazing."
His eyes shone at the thought, but quickly darkened again.
"I have to work. You go have fun, and when I'm out from under this project next week, we'll go out somewhere. I promise."
"Okay,"
Layla said. But relief washed through her, even as he drew her close for one more kiss. She was definitely crossing the line. Getting out of town again was the smartest thing to do.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Kiyoshi Tanaka's vacation villa stood at the end of a long gravel drive, past iron gates and a guardhouse. Emerging from the private car Hiro had arranged, Layla drew in a sharp breath. Even in the weak, late winter sun, the estate dazzled. Manicured cypress and pine trees flanked a rolling lawn and a brick terrace. The mid-19th century mansion towered before her, its stucco the color of lemon gelato. Even the Goldman brothers, who had kept up an exhausting banter of frat boy humor in German the entire flight over, seemed momentarily awed by it as they followed her to the front door. The place was strangely quiet, as if it were under some kind of enchantment. The oblong pool was covered up, the marble fountain dry. The door was flung open, breaking the spell. Hiro, sporting a new, deep blue hair color, greeted them all with his lopsided grin.
"Welcome to Villa Tanaka," he said. "You're just the people I have been waiting for. Now our party can begin."
From somewhere deep inside the house, the bass of a techno beat pulsed. Layla felt a flash of irritation at his effusive greeting and flinched as he kissed her on both cheeks. "Thanks for leaving me behind that infusion, asshole," she wanted to say. But she needed to be the perfect house guest. Hiro led them through the marble-floored foyer, past a silent welcoming committee of white marble statuary, and into the massive kitchen. There, Jehan and Mohammed were making alcohol-infused smoothies. Jehan, hands covered in lemon juice, ran to Layla with a little squeal and threw her arms around her, then around Marcus and Adrian.
"You made it," she said, thrusting drinks into their hands. "Here, imbibe, then come meet everyone."
Layla tasted the smoothie, the freshest lemons, the strongest alcohol. Her eyes watered and her next sip was fake. This was a business trip, after all. Hiro led them down a corridor. The pulsing beat intensified. The corridor led to a large sitting room overlooking the lake, with French doors leading out to a balcony. Tall windows with the shutters open let in the light and offered up a breathtaking view of Lake Como. It glittered silver, blue, and white, reflecting the shades of the mountains beyond. An ambitious early season ferry glided by. The Gaffars displayed their art in proper and traditional ways, all of it kept at arm's length, framed or under glass. But here, the Tanaka collection was surprisingly accessible and interspersed with contemporary and ordinary objects. Ancient Italian statuary and busts occupied the room and seemed to mingle with the guests. A marble Italian bust sported headphones. Layla's gaze shifted, taking in the disrespectful treatment of the Japanese collector's vacation villa. What looked like an antique candy dish was being used as an ashtray, with several still smoldering butts in the center. What would the notoriously meticulous collector say if he walked in the door right now? In one corner was an elaborate setup of beatbox equipment. Hiro took up a position behind it and started playing with the sub-bass settings and speeds, laying down a new track. the undulating sounds added to the surreal Alice down the rabbit hole feeling. Layla shook herself loose from Jehan and approached Hiro.
Well, how do you like the place?
Hiro asked her, in English.
I love it, she said. I can see why you'd rather stay here than in Milan.
Yes, here it is very peaceful, said Hiro,
cranking up the volume switch on the beatbox. She could feel the bass throb in her veins.
I can actually hear myself think.
He pointed meaningfully to his head. Hiro was spacing out, falling into the music. She had to keep him on topic while she could.
It's almost like a museum, she said. Your dad sure has a lot of art. All these marble busts and statues, amazing.
Hiro shrugged.
These are everywhere in Italy. They are not so valuable.
Did you put the valuable stuff away for the party? If I were you, I'd be really worried about theft and damage.
Well, there are some things upstairs in glass cases, but they are locked and alarmed,
Hiro said.
And the oldest, most valuable stuff is not here.
Oh? Did he get rid of some things?
She hardly dared ask. Hiro was perpetually buzzed, stoned, or high, but too many questions might arouse even his curiosity.
No, no, said Hiro. They're in Crete, at our other vacation home.
Their other vacation home, of course. She should have known there'd be more than one.
Why there?
Hiro lost himself in a groove for a moment, swaying slightly, and she wasn't sure if he'd heard.
My father has a different theme in each of his houses, Hiro explained. The Crete villa is more rustic, so he likes to keep the older artifacts there. They fit in better.
Makes sense, said Layla,
still struggling to make sense of it at all. Why buy all this art to take up space in homes you were rarely in? She thought of the one Coptic icon on wood that her mother used to display in their tiny apartment, how she would lovingly dust it with a rag once a week and pause in her cooking to admire it. Hiro's eyes were glazing. Layla ventured just one more question, gauging his degree of intoxication.
You mentioned he has some pieces here in glass cases, she said. I'd love to see them. I geek out over ancient art, she added with a laugh. Because of my cousin's business, I guess, it's in the blood.
Hiro shrugged.
I do not judge people. Enjoy the art. The staircase is that direction.
He pointed.
The cases are on the landing on the next floor up.
Before Jehan or anyone else could see her disappear, Layla darted out of the room and ran up the bridal staircase two steps at a time. Palladian windows along the landing offered more stunning views of the lake, but the antiquities, a collection of 15 items, interested her more. They were in cases affixed to walnut stands or in glass cases attached to the walls. Good. Maybe they'd stay safe from the revelers downstairs. She took out her iPhone and quickly took pictures of each object. They were mostly earthenware or terracotta vessels and figurines. Nothing was labeled, but her two visits to the Rothkopf Gallery and all the readings she'd done for Pierce had given her some sense of what she was looking at. As the noise grew louder downstairs, she felt like an adult at a kid's party. The feeling reminded her of her senior year at Georgetown, when she already had her sights set on the FBI, and everyone else suddenly seemed so young.
Layla? Where's Layla?
Jehan's voice echoed up from the ground floor. Layla tiptoed away from the stairs and down the corridor. She located the master bedroom suite, sparsely furnished in a Mediterranean style. Drawers and closets revealed little. She opened the nightstand drawers, cringing at what she might find. A lonely man's porn collection? No. She breathed a sigh of relief. Only a copy of Smithsonian Magazine, with a sticky note flagging an article. She turned to it and read the headline to see what had caught his interest. The Amulet Men of Fayum, by Dr. Catherine Danforth, Distinguished Professor of Egyptology, University College of London. She skimmed the first few paragraphs. The article was about amulets from the Fayum region of Egypt, which were believed to have been worn by healers who called themselves magic men. The article was lengthy and dense, so she just took some photos of the pages and resolved to read it later. The thumping bass from the party kicked up a notch, calling her back to her central mission. She needed to find Tanaka's home office. She found it at the opposite end of the corridor, a relatively humble room closed in by heavy floor-to-ceiling shutters. She made a beeline for the desk and rifled through the drawers and file cabinets, searching for any documents that corresponded to the 15 antiquities on the landing. In the lower left desk drawer, she found a file, hand-labeled in kanji. Lake Como Collection, Antiquities. It almost seemed to be waiting for her, daring her to find it. Layla took photos of all the receipts and provenance documents in the file, glancing over each one. Most of the items upstairs had been purchased from Farwadi's galleries in Cairo and in New York. Tanaka seemed to be a loyal client of her cousin. She made a note in her phone to ask Farwadi later about the extent of Tanaka's purchases. Two vases had been purchased from Bennett Rothkopf. In both cases, the documentation looked solid. No appraisals from the dubious Dr. Hassan al-Sayed. Still, Pierce would be able to look more carefully at the paperwork, her practiced eye more capable of seeing gaps in the narrative. Just as she snapped the last photo, a text buzzed in from James. "Get out while you're ahead." The words jolted her. She felt her blood drain away. Did he know something? She stared at the text a moment longer, frowning. A second text appeared. "Sorry, thought I was texting Dad. How's the villa?" Layla sent a thumbs up emoji but kept staring at the words of the misdirected text. "Get out while you're ahead." What did that mean? What was Bennett up to? It was a relief to report for work at the Rothkopf Gallery, to have some kind of schedule and shape to her day. After searching Tanaka's office, she'd gotten sucked into the party at last, avoiding the drugs but drinking more than she would have liked, fending off advances from one of the Goldman brothers, she still couldn't tell them apart, and winding up with the world's worst hangover. She'd wanted to get more information from Jehan about her mother's collecting habits and her use of appraisers, but Jehan and Mohammed had decided to let the conflict in Geneva make them stronger, and they spent much of the time in a guest room with the door locked. Layla had then, fueled by wine, emailed the dubious Dr. Hassan al-Sayed through his website contact form. "Hello, my name is Layla Noir, and I recently purchased a bronze cat statuette from the Rothkopf Galleries. I need it appraised for insurance purposes and would like to schedule a time to bring it in. Please let me know your availability." Getting any information from Hiro about his dad had also proved impossible. Once his gig in Milan started, he left his guests to take over the villa, then sent in a cleaning crew to cover up any signs of the party. Bennett had a full schedule, with back-to-back clients to take advantage of Layla's time. None of them were from the evidence wall, and the purchases were fairly pedestrian. Bennett sold a few decorative ivory boxes, a hair comb, a vase, and a bronze statuette. In each case, the provenance appeared watertight. As she listened to Bennett tell his clients the stories behind the relics, she thought about her own spotty provenance, the holes in her own story that she was always discovering. Her business wasn't all that different. She had to sell people on her authenticity. She looked good on paper, until you looked too closely. James was mostly locked up in his studio, as before. "I'm way behind schedule," he apologized.
There was a problem with the adhesive bath, and I had to start again.
Still, he found ways to pop into the gallery on his short breaks. Near the end of her shift, she went into the supply closet to use the photocopier. Bennett needed some receipts copied, and Layla was also copying provenance documents, which she planned to hand over to Pierce. She heard the door open behind her and moved quickly to block the documents in the out tray. But it was just James. He shut the door and embraced her.
"I think I heard you speaking 4 different languages out there today,"
he said.
"Nerdy?"
"God, no. Sexy."
"Really?"
She laughed. They kissed, while the copier behind her churned out duplicitous documents, page after page.
False Idols is written by Lisa Klink, Patrick Lawyer, and Diana Wren. Performed by Lauren Ezzo. Produced by Amanda Rose Smith. FBI advisor Robert K. Whitman. Theme music by Amanda Rose Smith. You're listening to Adrenaline False Idols, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question 2 ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.
Adrenaline is produced by Nicole Kreuter and Kaylin West. Associate produced by Devin Shepard. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Hosted by Neil Heligers. Audio editing by Kaylin West. Original theme by Marcus Bagala. Original cover art by Kendall Thomas. Find more shows like this on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.